That's Ascension Day from Talk Talk, and it's the choice of Robert Plant, who is right in front of me now. You chose that song. Why? Why that band? Why that song?
Well, I just took their music with me that particular period, Laughing Stock, Colour of Spring, all that stuff, when I was on tour in America in the 90s, and it was a bit like sort of the other side of Vaughan Williams or Goretzky. It was another side of something that was almost classical. And the kind of the beauty of Mark Hollis's voice against, and the fragility of it, I think it's just so beautiful. That's come back, Mark.
He didn't like it, did he?
I don't think the business did
him in.
Yeah. Well, you can you can understand it, can't you, really?
Totally.
But if you just, I'm very lucky because I've just shot right through the middle of it three or four times.
How? So, how come? How have you done that?
Well, most of the time I ignore it, but this is a particular time when I'm not ignoring it, and I'm being backed by some amazing people, you know. It's a good label, and the guys in America who signed us are, like, they're killers. Nonsuch is a great label.
Just want good people on your side.
Yeah, Warner's have been great, and they are still. I went over to Burbank with Nick, my manager, and we went and met all the big wigs, and I was really thinking this is going to be dreadful. And they were so on the money with music. I mean, really on it.
So yeah. Heartening as an artist.
Yeah.
Such a relief.
Yeah. So you could have a conversation about Dinosaur Jr. before you even sat down, one of my favourite things, and you realise that it's not all corporate right the way through the cake, and people die for music.
Yeah.
Love it.
It was the Roundhouse, I think, that I saw you last time we were doing the Proms.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, with the Band of Joy.
Yeah. Mm. And you played the Roundhouse during the iTunes Festival.
Yeah.
And I did, I just want to go back to this because it was a really sweet story, and you were telling Lauren, so you can tell my listeners now, about when you played the Roundhouse back
Well, is
in
it
the
a
day.
Sweet? Is it a sweet story? When I was in the original Band of Joy in 67, I used to play there quite a bit. There were a few psychedelic centres, the UFO Club in London, and it was called Middle Earth then. So the Roundhouse was otherwise known as Middle Earth, and I played there a few times with Bonzo and the Band of Joy. And, so in 1968, when the Yardbirds became Led Zepp, our first kind of big gig outside of playing pubs was the Roundhouse on November the 9th, 1968. And that very day, at about noon, I married Maureen, my true love, and we headed off to do the gig. You know, I mean, no sound checks, no monitors on the PA, nothing at all. Just go there and turn up, and as Bonzo used to say, look good. But we broke down on the way, so we had to push the car to the gig. The bride, the groom, the best man and his missus. And we rumbled in there. And it was great, really, because if the whole thing had collapsed and stopped, like, a year later or 6 or 7 months later, that would have been a highlight, something to talk about forever and a day. As it is, I played the Roundhouse so many times. Every time I go on that stage, no matter how much they beautify it, I remember the shudder. And the confinement, quietly, you know.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And you're still talking about it today because I'm asking you questions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there you go. There's a lot of places that I can remember various things taking place.
I'm sure, many stories. So what I love the most about you is your enthusiasm and your energy that you have for music. And it's like a life force within you. That's how it would seem. And with this album, you know, I've been reading what you've been saying about it, and I can't repeat it because there are swear words involved, but you are very happy with this album.
Well, it's all part of the big journey, and that sounds a bit sort of smug, but the thing is, if you've been given the gift doesn't stay exactly as it always has been forever and a day. It's up to you to look after the gift or just do something else. So I've tried to, and in fact, really, my schooling from the beginning before Zeppelin was always to mix it up. So I've had a life of mixing music up, and in doing so... I've met the most amazing people in so many different places and countries and circumstances. And that gives me a lot more breadth, and it gives me satisfaction, because if I was just hanging on to three or four tunes and doing a Christmas tour every year, I mean, I'd be better off pumping gas, to be honest, or trying to learn how to be a gardener.
So many bands, though, they'll be gone for 5 years or, you know, for a certain fixed amount of time, and you just get the impression that they're struggling to write their songs, they're struggling to find the inspiration, but that isn't a problem with you.
Well, it's not even that, really. It's just like, what do you want to do? Because singing It's not, you know, you don't get a diploma and then sing. You either do it or you don't do it. And how far do you want that to go, you know? I mean, I've done karaoke in places around the world, in China, and even in the black country, where I've been sung off the stage by guys who are really good. Not doing rock, but doing, you know, big ballads or whatever it is.
Yeah, come on, what do you do at karaoke? Obviously, I want to know.
Well, I mean...
What are your favourites?
I can sing great Orbison stuff and those classic songs from when I was a kid. They're indelibly, like, printed on your head, so inside your mind. But I was with my boy Logan, and we'd been... Hong Kong had been handed back to the Chinese, and we disappeared up the Silk Road the next day, right the way into Xinjiang province. In the most landlocked place on the planet, we sat under a tree and drank beer and talked about all this stuff that was going on. And we turned around and went back ultimately to Beijing and went to a karaoke night there. And it was amazing because it was me and Logan versus the entire Chinese nation, because it was all based on applause. So there was a kind of clapometer from some old TV show from the 60s. And, of course, there was just me and Logan clapping. Logan was, yeah, come on, Dad, come on.
Louder.
But, yeah, it was good fun. And, I mean, basically, singing, you've got to mix it up, otherwise it's terribly boring.
And you have to be inspired by different kinds of music. And I know that African music has really inspired you on this album, Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar.
Yeah, well, I've been living with amongst that since, when I was courting. My lady at that time, she lived in an Indian community in the black country, next door to some Gujaratis who always had amazing music playing. And the deal was then with the hippie side of life that African music wasn't so prominent, but the whole deal with Indian music was very powerful and strong. And the incredible string band and all those people were dancing through the, you know, through the corn and all that, flowers in their hair. So it was all linked in. And then later on in the early 70s, I went to Morocco and I suggested to Jimmy Page that he might come with me. And we just wrote songs out there. And from then till now, I've been a kind of persona non grata in the southern Morocco. It's I can speak some French, some North African Arabic, and I get by.
You get by.
But I hear loads of music. And being with Justin Adams now, from his adventures out there producing Tinariwen and... his stuff with Rashid Taha and all the connections with the Real World gang and the WOMAD gang and all that. It's a natural place for me to be. The only difference between me and them is that I am also able to turn on the tough rock and roll side of things too. And that makes it a good cocktail.
Makes it very interesting. Let's hear a track now from the session. This is Robert Plant doing Rainbow.
Up with love.
yes, I will. Oh, yes.
It's Rainbow from Robert Plant, who's my guest on the show this evening. The album is called Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar. Do the words come easy? Because, again, you know, people can run out of inspiration. Or is it a great thing, being older, that the words are actually, you have more experiences to write about?
Well, you certainly do. More errors, more curves, and more joy, I guess. Because, you know, I guess you see different times in your life, there are different intensities and contrasts in what you do and what you see. So sometimes I've found that I can ignore the most wondrous moments because I've seen them or been involved in them quite a lot. So if you stand back a while or go, and I did teleport myself into American life for a while, and when I came back, and I wasn't there, you know, 24/7, but I was there like 22/7, whatever it was. So I came back and I began to see and realize how much I'd taken stuff for granted that's really beautiful, including this old studio here, all this stuff, you know. It's
like BBC Maidervale Studios.
I mean, it's all part of the stuff, the fabric of my life has been around great things, you know. And when you go outside of them, you'd still become an accidental tourist, no matter how well I thought I might have known America or wherever it is. You only still see it. You don't really get the guidebook. You just get this great, you know, picture of America and a picture of this, a picture of, you know. But when you come back here, you kind of dig back in and go, whoa! And all the kind of the warts and all element of it, well, you know, the things that don't work, the things that are not quite as inspiring as or on the money as they are elsewhere, they suddenly become charming. Mind you, it'll pass.
For a very short time.
Yeah, you got stuck on the train on that line, you know, I mean, that's,
that wasn't quaint at all.
No, there's no leaves on the line yet either.
There was no excuse whatsoever.
No.
But there are songs from the heart on this album.
It's about all of life. It's not about one situation. It's about how you might look back or look forward or even sideways on the day to something that's going on. And there's a lot of sideways songs on this record. It's not, this is not a, I've read somewhere it's a song about loneliness and getting old, and I thought, where's that guy? I know who he is. He's some fart from the 70s who's like got himself like a couple of lines in one of the broadsheets. And I'm thinking, that can't be right.
That's so unfair, because that's what people will now believe.
Well, I don't think they'll believe that, because they should know me better than that. If they,
So sideways glances, what are you talking about there? What kind
of what's going on right now for me, you know? I mean, but you don't spell it out like you're writing the song for Jerry and the Pacemakers, you know? It's not like, how do you do what you do to me, if I only knew? You know, you have to write with some substance and some ambiguity, otherwise there's nothing to write about. Everything lies in between the lines rather than on top of them.
So where's home now? Where have you come back to?
It's Shropshire, Worcestershire borders.
Okay. So that's where you came from?
My family are from the Black Country, so I slightly got out of the Black Country when I was about 5 or 6. My dad aspired to get us out of there, and I've been going back ever since.
What do you love about it?
Oh, I love the humour. and the personality of the people is spectacular. There's such a great... No, but nothing is sacred. It's just so much fun.
And do you socialise quite a lot around there? Is there a local pub that you go to?
There's several, actually, yeah. I went to one the other night with my dog, Arthur, and the Black Country family's sort of there throughout the pub in the different tables, and everybody knows each other, but it's just on the edge of the Black Country, so it's pretty attractive there, but it's a great atmosphere because everybody is charming and everybody dresses up to go there, and they just sit there eating cheese and onion rolls and stuff like that and drinking cider and being silly. So everybody I know who's kind of slightly classy comes from New York or somewhere, you know. Mm. I say, okay, now, you've done all that. You've been to Studio 54. You know all about the Museum of Modern Art. I'm going to take you to a proper place now. And it's everybody comes out going, what amazing people. I went in the other night and a woman said to me, who are you with then? You know. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you know, in the music. You know, so it was like very funny that they knew who I was, but they were going to wind me up a bit. And I think, I can't even imagine anything better than that.
No.
Having a good laugh with people.
Okay, let's have some more music now. This is another track from the album. Can you tell us about this? It's called Somebody There.
I guess it's just a kind of a look at life from sort of from above, almost like a sort of aerial view of how it is from when you first step out into the social, you know, bric-a-brac that we will have to deal with right the way through. It's just interesting having a kind of bird's eye view of how we get ourselves ready for a life dealing with each other.
This is it. This is Somebody There.
Young boy,
It's Radio 2, and tonight it's all about Robert Plant. We've got a session with the man, and he's stood right in front of me now. Talk us through the band, who there is in the
band. Well, in 2001, I had had enough of playing faceless arenas in Europe, and Jimmy Page and I had had a project where we'd gathered an Egyptian orchestra, and we'd done some great stuff in the mid-90s. But basically, it had seen better days for me. I just didn't... I couldn't understand the point of playing, you know, in central Germany in the winter to people that you can't see, you can barely hear, and there's no soul for me. So I jacked it in, and I started thinking about my real roots. And my roots were West Coast psychedelia, you know, and everything from Jefferson Airplane through to Blue Cheer and... I don't know, Grateful Dead, some great stuff. So I contacted some guys and started piecing a group together. And the drummer, Clive Demo, was with Portishead. And he said, "I'm free." And Johnny Baggett, who plays with Portishead and Massive Attack, said, "I'm free." And my son-in-law, Charlie Jones, said, "Yeah, I'm free." And Paul Thompson from The Cure said, "I'm free." So we formed this group called Strange Sensation, and we cut a couple of records. Personnel changed. Paul went back to The Cure. Charlie went to Goldfrapp, and Clive went to Radiohead. So same band, except for Billy Fuller came in from Beak. The drummer Dave Smith is in a lot of jazz stuff down in the Vortex Club in Stoke Newington. And Skin, the other guitarist, came from Cast, and Justin Adams was really the kind of main wheel in all this, and he'd been with Jar Wobble and Sinead O'Connor. So we had this amazing band, and I said goodbye to him because I wanted to go to America. So I went off with Alison Krauss and had this amazing twist in my career, and had a wonderful, remarkably revelatory time with T-Bone Burnett and all those people, because man, that's another world.
What kind of a world is it? Give us some insight.
It's very, very charming and very, very polite and incredibly musical. And their depth of knowledge in music that I hadn't really ever attached myself to.
Was it quite daunting? Did you feel intimidated?
No, because there's nothing to lose, is there? What can you lose after
your
where I've been?
I love so, it, yeah.
I went over with Nicola, my manager, Nicola Powell, and we went into Nashville and met Alison before, a very funny, charming woman. We met the night before the recording started, and I realised that I had no idea about how to sing a harmony, and yet... obviously, we were going to have to sing harmonies because of two voices. Mm. So there began one of the most hysterically funny periods of my life where I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. I was with complete strangers, but for Alison. And in 8 days, we'd finished the album. Mm. More or less.
Yeah.
We went to LA and did Gone, 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 and which was a big single. And Please Read the Letter, I think, which was got a Grammy for Song of the Year, which Paige
Amazing.
And I had written. Yeah, we'd written that. And more or less discarded it over here. So the worlds are different. They run quite differently. Their impetus is different. The involvement of the musicians. A lot of guys in Nashville are stunningly good players. But they have a certain place where they exist and belong in the musical development. A lot of guys will do sessions and at 6 o'clock they go home. Tea's on the table.
Very workmanlike, but then they're so accomplished.
Well, yeah, they are. And I think it's almost like dormitory stuff because... they all want to get out and play, but at least if you do two or three sessions a day and you're playing with Emmy Lou or, you know, Patty Griffin or Dolly Parton or whoever, and Dolly's really, she's pretty useful. She turns up on sessions with Buddy, gets to his house with a tray of muffins in the morning.
Does she?
Yeah, well, everybody starts with breakfast. Mm. And then when they've eaten loads of muffins and drank loads of coffee and talked about each other or somebody who isn't in the room.
About it.
Then they kick in and make these amazingly beautiful records. But they're nothing to do with this. Mm. So when I came back to this, I ran helter-skelter into the arms of this great music.
And how long did it take to record and where?
We did it in Bath, around the corner from Peter's place, Peter Gabriel's place. I suppose it took about 3 weeks. But we were writing and recording at the same time, so we were trying things out. And I think the really good thing about our friendship and musical structure is if something isn't working, you don't have to actually take people through some sort of psychological pain barrier to explain it. We all kind of interact and go, no, that isn't probably right for it. And sometimes with recordings and stuff, people are very absolutely sensitive. But we, like the way we play, we throw everything at it. And then bit by bit, the priorities in the music change. And we've got this amazing weave, you know. But we've been playing now for about 18 months around the world. And we just took on some stuff in South America. We're doing, I think, Lollapalooza and stuff in and down in the south there in Buenos Aires and stuff in March. So we're out there playing with contemporary, well, with Jack White and Black Keys and all that.
Yeah, you've talked about Jack White, about the desire to work with him.
Well, you know, I know Jack quite well, and I'd like him because he's like a magpie, you know. He's like a jackdaw, and so am I. I think, you know, you can take a little bit of this or a bit of that and mix it up. It's like with Delta Blues, you know. The beautiful music from Charlie Patton and Robert Johnson didn't just stay there. It went into everybody's music. So Jack's good. I think he's got the right idea. And he's jumpy. And I like that. I like somebody who's, you know, he's ambitious. He's got a good gift. And he's also just a little bit nervous.
A little bit awkward, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that. That's,
yeah, it's kind of unsettling.
You've got to have that. There's nothing worse than the kind of conceit of thinking you've got it down.
When was the last time, or, yeah, times when you have been out of your skin and uncomfortable in your skin? If nothing particularly scares you because of everything you've accomplished, the most awkward or the thing that you're most nervous about, what would that be?
Well, I don't know. I was going to buy a new second-hand car, and I got awkward about that because I thought the driver's seat wasn't big enough.
What kind of car?
Yeah, I can't remember. But okay. What else is there?
As an artist.
My soccer team being crap but now being great, that's really hurt me a lot. As an artist, you know, I haven't got a clue. I don't care. I mean, I know I can sing good. I know the band is great. We've got a lot of friends, and we garner friends in all walks of musical life.
It's so nice to talk to you. Always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're going to play a Led Zeppelin track now that you've done for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
We did two for you, actually.
Oh.
I guess we should play the one that is probably most appropriate, is Thank You.
Okay, we'll do that.
With a Difference.
Thanks to you.